Deconstruct 2005, Brighton, England. Stuart Langridge, Dom Scripting and Ajax.
Next up we have Stuart Langridge, web developer and author of the slightly unfortunately titled DHTML Utopia, but the subtitle's much better, Modern Web Design Using JavaScript and DOM. We'll have a few of the books to give away later on this afternoon. Stuart's going to be discussing the resurgence of JavaScript and DOM scripting, how it's not such a dirty word anymore, and how it combines with XML to give us the methodology that is Ajax, enabling us to do all these rich internet applications that Andy was talking about earlier on. So over to Stuart.
Thank you very much. Morning. Before I start, I think I'd like to say thank you very much to Andy and Richard, the Clear Left guys, for inviting me here to talk to you, and thank you very much for coming and watching. I'm going to talk today a bit, as Rich says, about DOM scripting, about JavaScript, about Ajax. So there's likely to be some stuff you've heard before, hopefully some stuff you haven't. So I've got, you know, some new material, and I've got some old material, and I've got some stolen material. So the key thing, Andy's already talked about this, and I suspect Simon Wilson's going to talk about it as well, and everyone during the course of the afternoon. Web 2.0, scripting, Ajax, what it gives you is a better user experience. You know, you hammer this point home. The gentleman who asked the question about what you can do to sell it to clients, and what it gives you is a chance for your users to actually get at the web in a better way, you know. The key point for the bit where you saw three quarters of the text was that in addition to being able to design the look of your site and the way your site works, you can design users' interactions with that site. And that's the really, really important part about what Web 2.0 technologies, what Ajax, what DOM scripting give you. The ability to design users' interactions, not just have them use the web the way they expect, but you can push them into doing things in a particular way, doing things the way they expect, or routing them into ways that will, that they're not expecting, but they'll find better. You know, and JavaScript gives you that. Now, you'll probably know about JavaScript already, most of it at least, but what a lot of people remember JavaScript as being was having unicorns, you know, following your mouse cursor around. And they were cool, I remember them, 1996, it was brilliant. And, you know, scrolly messages in the status bar, that sort of thing. And so a lot of people used JavaScript a bit and then wrote it off, apart from doing image rollovers, which we do CSS now anyway. But as I say, a lot of people used JavaScript, wrote it off because of that, because you had to do completely different things for Netscape 4 and for IE4, and it just kind of went away out of every web developer's toolbox. But now there's a lot more of it, because the web used to be exactly the same. I mean, you remember all that, right? Hands up if you had a website with under construction written on it. So, you know, we lived through that. The web used to be like that, and people took a step back. The web standards thing came along. So you've now got clean, structured HTML. You've got CSS layered on top. Everything makes a lot more sense. You know, it's a brave new world, CSS and valid HTML. And that's such an improvement. I'm quite convinced everyone in this room would say that that's an enormous, enormous improvement over what we had before. HTML, it's not just a big pile of hacks anymore. You know, there's a structure to it, there's a sense to it. And JavaScript and DOM scripting and Ajax on top of that works in exactly the same way. It all plugs in together. So, you know, you kind of clean and powerful and expressive way of doing things, which is what we're looking for. The key point I'm trying to make here is JavaScript's a tool. You know, it's not, it's just a tool, and a lot of tools can be used for good things, a lot of tools can be used for evil things, and JavaScript went through a long period of being used for evil, essentially. But not anymore. You know, this is not, despite the title of my book, which I didn't think of, this isn't the HTML. You know, it's not the old days of wars between IE4 and Netscape 4, and things saying this site best viewed in Internet Explorer, or this site best viewed in Netscape, or whatever. You've got standards now. We had standards then, but nobody used them. We've got standards now. You know, so you can, as I say, you can exercise a certain amount of control over the way people interact with your sites, with your Web 2.0 applications that you just didn't have before. And what that gives you is a chance to make the web work better. You know, and God knows we could do with it from time to time. And that's what we're looking to do. Again, I'm going to hammer this point home. That's his separation, that bit there. But CSS is an absolutely perfect example of this. But the really important point about CSS from this perspective is that, you know, W3C was saying, yeah, CSS, it provides separation of structure and presentation, but they were saying that in 1996, and I didn't know what it meant. I don't think anyone else knew what it meant either. You know, it sounded good in theory, and I assume that there were people back then who could see roughly what the web would be now. They just didn't do a very good job at all of articulating it. The bloke who actually articulated it was Dave Shea with Zen Garden. And Zen Garden's a fantastic, fantastic example of this. I mean, have you got the book? I got the book. Brilliant, brilliant book. But, I mean, you've got all these really pretty designs. You know, you've got Dave's design, and then someone did this one. I forget who it was. It was Andy, I think. But the key point about the Zen Garden is that it demonstrated the power of CSS, certainly to me. It was kind of an eye-opener. It really was that, you know, I'd heard people say, well, yeah, you can swap in different styles, you can apply style to this, and structure and presentation are separated. But the Zen Garden, you look at it, and there's, what, 100 and something designs on it now, I think? And 600? Really? Good Lord. So, yeah, you've got 600 designs all on top of one unchanging base, and that separation, that's the thing that CSS gave us. And, I mean, you can see, I suspect, where I'm going with this. In that what CSS gave you was loads and loads of power, a whole different way of doing things. And if you couldn't see CSS at all, you got, you know, if you're on a mobile phone, or you're the Google bot, or you're a time traveller from 1977 or something, then it still all worked because you had seamless degradation. And that approach, that whole new way of doing things, informs the way everyone's building the web now. We don't need to sell people anymore on the idea that that separation is a great thing and it gives you the power. And that's exactly the way JavaScript works. I mean, this presentation is done in S5. For those of you who haven't seen it, I expect most of you have seen it, but for those of you who haven't seen it, S5 is a presentation tool that runs in the browser. And each presentation it's just a plain, simple HTML document. Each individual slide is marked up as a div, class equals slide, and that's all you need. You get a stock style sheet, and the CSS makes it look like a presentation. So each slide comes up full screen, it resizes the text, all that kind of thing. And then there's a bit of DOM scripting on top of it to make it work like a presentation. So I just click the mouse, moves on to the next slide, hides the old one, shows the new one. You know, click the mouse, next slide comes up. And that, again, I mean, you know, this is a web page, and it's a presentation at the same time. And in exactly the same way, you've got a bit of HTML, a bit of CSS, and then a bit of DOM scripting on top, and you've built an application. You've built PowerPoint, or Keynote, if you like that kind of thing. And, you know, so this idea, as Andy talked about, the idea that you can build applications, not necessarily applications that have to work exactly like desktop applications, that have to emulate the way desktop applications look or the way desktop applications work, but the idea that you can take the web, a simple web page, and turn it into something which can be multi-purpose for something like this, is exactly what you're looking for. And again, you know, go over the point again, if you're the Google bot or if you're on a mobile phone or whatever, you can look at this presentation on the web and it all works perfectly fine. You've got loads of power, seamless degradation. The DOMs really, again, Andy said this, he stepped on about half my presentation in his questions at the end, but it's a layer up on top of the existing web. You know, it's not a tightly integrated thing at the lowest levels. It's a layer right across the top. Peter Paul Koch called it the behavior layer, something Andy mentioned. And the key point there is that it lets you control the behavior of using. The same way HTML controls the structure of your data and CSS controls the presentation of it, the DOM and JavaScript let you control the behavior. So you can decide what things do and then route your users into different places. What you want, because you can control all the users' interactions. And that's the important thing that the DOM gives you that we didn't have before. Before you had browsers and people interacted with your websites or with your web applications the way the browser manufacturers dictated. And now you haven't got that anymore. You can control interactions in a different way. So if you design those interactions to work the way you want them to, rather than the way IE wants them to, or the way Firefox wants them to, then you're free from browser limitations, completely free from them. If you don't like the fact that you've got to submit stuff back to the server, don't do it anymore. Bit of Ajax, bit of the DOM, everything works like that. So, no page refreshes is the thing that everyone talks about. And to some extent, you can't avoid it because, as we said, you want to have a site which works without the JavaScript turned on. But users don't have to wait anymore. You don't have to punch a button and then wait 30 seconds for it to send it back to the server, send you back the same page again. Which is, it's just such an improved user experience. You've all used Ajax stuff and you've all seen it be responsive, be like an application, be like something you'd expect, rather than be like a website. It doesn't seem like websites anymore. If you want to let a user know that something has happened, just fade in a little note somewhere on the page, then fade it out again once they've read it. You can do all that manipulation on the client. You do it yourself, wherever you want to, without having to send stuff back, reconstruct a load of HTML, send that HTML back again, which is fantastic. I'm going to look at a couple of examples, but I'm not going to go into too much detail because there is, in my experience, nothing more boring than trying to copy down code from a presentation, especially when a small portion of it disappears off the left-hand side of the screen. So there are loads of, I won't say loads, there are quite a few really decent books out there on the market. I mean, I don't know which one you want to choose. You've got a perfectly free choice of which book you'd like to choose. Actually, being honest, the one you want, at least initially, is Jeremy Keith's DOM Scripting. Magnificent book. It starts off at the lowest levels. It takes you into what scripting can do, what the DOM is, how to start plugging this stuff together, and works you right the way up, all the way up to building, almost proper applications, which is exactly what you want. The other book is that, JavaScript The Definitive Guide. Now, this is the only book I've ever bought two of. I've got one at home and I've got one at work. And the first two-thirds of the book never gets looked in. The first two-thirds of the book is discursive. It explains things. The last third of the book is reference. And it's the most useful thing I've ever owned. I hit it all the time at work. And I'm thinking, okay, what methods has a string got? What parameters do I pass to this? How do I pick that up? So when you start getting into actually hacking JavaScript, you'll use it all the time. The other book you might want to buy is The HTML Utopia by SidePoint, which I think is not too bad a book, I must say. Although you do have to excuse the author photo. I'll tell you, they said to me, you've got to do an author photo. And I said, okay, no problem. And my wife took 35 photos, and that was the best of them. So, you think I'm kidding. So if anyone's taking any pictures today to put on Flickr, don't. Take pictures of Andy, and then take pictures of Simon or something. But leave me alone. Examples. A point that Andy made and a couple of people made out in the audience, and one we need to come back and back and back and back to, scripting needs to be unobtrusive. It needs to not be wound into your HTML, and your sites need to not depend on it. Don't do JavaScript links in the hrefs. Don't make your site come up blank and then fill everything in with JavaScript and not bother filling it in if JavaScript's not there. Because it's a flaw with quite a few Web 2.0 applications, and it's, again, something that Andy mentioned. We don't want to make the same mistakes we made in the year 2000, where people were in such a rush to get to market that they were leaving out an awful lot of an awful lot of their customers, an awful lot of the way the web works, because a lot of the power that we've got is that people can take your things and repurpose them to do what they want with them. This is where things like microformats and stuff plug into that in quite a big way. Because you're serving structured data to people, if they decide not to use it the way that you want them to, then they can use it the way they want them to, but they can't do that if your application builds its entire user interface with JavaScript. They can then only do what you want. And the flexibility, one of the points of Web 2.0 was made earlier, is that data's in open formats. You can pull it out if you want to, do what you want with it, do mashups, remix sites. So again, you know, clean HTML, clean CSS first of all, and then take a step back and say, okay, how do I want people to interact with this? Not how does the browser let them interact with it, but how do I want them to do it? And you can then design that behavior layer on the top of your existing application. So you're almost building two applications, and the point from the back was well taken. How do you sell clients on the idea that you're going to build two applications and they're only going to see one of them? But you can hook the things in. So you can make incremental improvements over what the browser offers without developing an entirely new thing like Gmail. You know, Gmail is not a very good example, because Gmail have got two applications. They've got a basic HTML version of Gmail, which doesn't use JavaScript at all, works just like choose your own personal webmail client that you were using 5 years ago. And then you've got Gmail, the snazzy DOM version. And they're two entirely separate things. They're two entirely separate code bases, pretty much. I don't think there's anyone from Google in here who can tell me that I'm wrong. But they are two entirely separate applications, and that's not the way to do it. What you should be doing is building Gmail, the HTML version, and then hooking into that with the DOM to change it to work the way you want it to. Really good example of layering JavaScript over the top of the way these things work is the Amazon recommendations page. Now you have to bear with me here a second. Right, now first thing I'm going to do is turn off JavaScript. This is the Amazon, this is my Amazon recommendations page. And I pull this up and it builds it on the server based on the books that I've bought from them and books that I've said I've liked in the past and books that I've sent back and whatnot. And underneath each book, you've got an I own it button and a not interested button. Now, Eyes of Prey, I own. So, click that, sends it back. This is a perfectly standard web application. You've all seen stuff like this. No problem at all. If I turn JavaScript on and refresh the page, what you actually get is, in addition to the I own it and not interested things, you get this little star rating thing. So you can rate individual books from 1 to 5. Now, I mean, you know, you move the mouse over there, the stars light up. You've all seen that. That's just standard JavaScript rollover stuff. The key point there, if I pick a different one that I haven't already clicked on, Rules of Prey, that's a good book. I like it. There, that bit there instantly changed to saved. Now that's doing two things. It's using Ajax to say, okay, you clicked on star number 4, I'll send that back to the server to save it, and it's updating the page dynamically with the DOM to say that you've saved your rating. And the two things happen independently, and because they're happening in the background, they happen pretty much instantaneously. Now, this here, I mean, it's very, very easy to rate books because of it. That's rubbish. So save that there. Because these things happen instantaneously, that's a useful feature. If each one of these star ratings submitted the page back to the server, sent the whole page back to me, wouldn't be a good feature. It just wouldn't be useful. So you wouldn't do it. It gives you the opportunity to provide new things to your users that they couldn't do beforehand. And that's a really fundamental thing. It gives you new methods of interaction, things that you just couldn't do before. If you look at a couple of things that Andy mentioned, like the online IM client, they had things like that before. There's an IRC client, I think, which runs as a CGI, it doesn't use JavaScript at all. And you could use it, but it was slow, it was cumbersome, it was unpleasant. And so, although these applications were theoretically buildable, in practice, no one would use them because they were really awkward. And that we can get away from. So again, the two things you get, the things that go hand in hand, are seamless degradation and loads of power. You do all these new things that there was no way, no concept of doing before. And at the same time, it all still works if you're not using the latest browsers or up to date with the latest technologies. Yeah. Everything, you can make everything a bit better with JavaScript and not disenfranchise all the people who were there before. Now, you know, a reasonable portion of you are designers, and one of the things that interests me about design is how there are so many little touches, little things that turn good stuff into great stuff. Now, I don't have whatever the magic touch is. I can look at some sites and go, that one's really brilliant, and that one isn't, but I don't really know why. Now, you know, 50% of you could probably put up your hands and go, yeah, I know why, that's why I'm a good designer, and clients pay me and I make loads of money and all that kind of thing. I don't know how to do it, but adding DOM scripting to the top of your sites gives you the opportunity to do that for methods of use as well as just the way it looks. Okay. It's just that the undefinable something that lets you decide how you want the web to work. Doesn't let Internet Explorer decide how you want the web to work, or Microsoft decide how you want the web to work, or whatever. So you can reform the web. You don't have to be hidebound by what the W3C said, or the way that the new HTML people, Ian Hickson, the WG, what they're putting together. If you don't want to do it that way, design your own things. Build your own widgets. Design how you want people to interact with your site. Everything's now an application. The idea that everyone could get at the web in the same way got the thing off the ground back in 95 and 96 and 97. The fact that you could go to one site and click a button, you could go to a different site and click a similar button and they did similar things, helped people for usability. And people like Jakob Nielsen would say that that's really, really important for the web. But it takes away your ability to design. It takes away the skills that you've got to provide something to users which is better than what they've already got. So you can step away from feeling hidebound. Certainly when I'm building things, I find myself locked in by thinking, but that's really awkward to do because I've got to stash something in the session, or I've got to pass something in the query string in order to maintain this setup that I've got with the site. And you can get away from that. Just step away from what the browser tells you can do and do what you want and then work out a way to make it happen. How to do it. Again, I'm not going to talk in massive detail here because you'll do a lot better looking at online resources or by, you know, buying a book, whichever book you want to buy. Any book. You've got a free choice of books. Whatever book you want. Absolutely. But coming back to the point, build scripts unobtrusively. Your HTML, again, should be perfectly clean. Don't put script in your HTML in the same way that you don't put CSS in your HTML. People started off and they went, oh, look, style tags, brilliant, style attributes. Fantastic, that's what I'm going to do. Embed a load of it in, and then you take a step back and think, no, hang on, because that's going to make it really difficult to reshape this site how I want. And scripting is exactly the same way. If you are putting together an HTML page and you're using lots of scripting techniques, but there's no script in your HTML other than, you know, a script source tag in the header, if that's all you're putting in, then basically you're doing it right. It's really, really difficult to do it wrong and stick with that. So if you can take all your scripting, put it in separate JavaScript files and not embed any in the page at all, then basically you're doing the right thing. Go for that. You know, CSS separates structure and presentation, and JavaScript separates structure and behavior. So they are three separate layers to your site. It's a little bit more complicated than CSS because the browser takes care of hooking up CSS yourself. You specify your style sheet, and the browser takes care of saying, okay, you've specified that selector, I'll apply it. It does all that for you. So all you have to do is just mention the CSS, and the browser makes it happen. JavaScript's it needs a little bit more TLC from you. You've got to actually make the effort to say, okay, here is some code that I want run. This is where I want it to happen. You've got to hook those things up yourself. Now, I'll have to go a bit into programmer talk here, so if you think I'm not speaking English, bear with me or wave a hand or something. JavaScript's event-driven. What that actually means is that all script runs in response to an event. And an event is something happening. It's normally generated by user action. So if a user clicks a button, that generates an event. And if a user submits a form, that generates an event. If the page finishes loading, that generates an event. And you set up your JavaScript so that it watches for those events. And that's the hooking up bit you've got to do. You've got to identify the events that you're interested in. So this button in my HTML, when someone clicks on that, I want to respond to the click there. Or when the page loads, I want to do this. Or when someone presses a key in this text area, I want to do this. So you identify all those events as part of your design process, and then set up your JavaScript so that it walks through and for each event says, here's a bit of code I want to run, hook it up. Again, you know, going to keep coming back to this point. If you do it that way, it's by definition unobtrusive. It sits on top as the behavior layer, and you don't have to do anything else because you're doing it all right. You know, keep the script out of the HTML in the same way that you keep CSS out of the HTML, and you're golden. Once you've got it all hooked up, you've got to wonder, well, you know, what can the JavaScript actually do? And the answer is it can do absolutely anything. Anything you can think of that you could do with HTML, you can do with JavaScript and DOM, because the JavaScript can rewrite the page completely, rewrite it entirely as it sees fit. So anything that you'd think, okay, on clicking that, I want the page to look like this. Instead of sending that back to the server, constructing how you want that new thing to look on the server, and then sending it back to the user again, you can just rewrite it on the fly. You can throw the whole lot away and build it all from scratch if you want to. It'll take a little while and it'll be a little bit complicated, but you can do that. So anything at all you can imagine in HTML, and people can imagine quite a lot in HTML, which is why we've got the web, anything you can imagine, you can do with the DOM. And then if you take the DOM's ability to rewrite a page on the fly, to add new things to it, to take the stuff away that you don't want there anymore, to swap some things around, change some text, whatever, and then Ajax's ability to send things back to the server without the user having to wait for it, you've got this ability to give the user something they don't have to wait for. It doesn't have to feel like a web application anymore. I think I saw a survey where they tried to get an indication of what people thought of the web. And the key thing that people thought was that you click on something and then wait for 10 seconds. That's what people think the web is. You know, it's like a desktop application except rubbish. You know, and it would be nice to not to show people it doesn't have to be like that. Things like Gmail being a roaring success, or at least partially, because when I click on a mail, it appears. I don't have to sit there and wait 30 seconds for it to serve it up from the server. And that's it gives a chance to teach, you know, the public in general what the web could be rather than what our predecessors made it. The Amazon recommendation I showed there, a perfect example of the DOM and Ajax fitting together to give you an easy feature, something that someone will see, understand how to use instantly, and not have to fight their way around. If you make users think, okay, this will take 10 seconds to do, and you've got 30 books to rate, no one's going to do it. So you miss out on the ratings. They miss out on the ability to have better recommendations served to them. Everyone ends up worse off. So it gives you the ability to do things that weren't possible before. One of the interesting things is that a lot of the DOM scripting that you write will be specific to the site you're on. It will do something very, very specific, very peculiar to that site, and it will be tightly integrated with the way that site works. But there are, because scripting is unobtrusive, there are a lot of individual bits of code out there that you can just cherry pick, make your sites better without you doing any work at all. Got kind of generic enhancements. There are a lot of people, for instance, who've got real-time comment previews on their web blogs. For example, I built a thing that does sortable tables. Some of you might have seen it, some of you might not have done. But what it actually does is you include it in the top of the page, script source equals whatever, sortable table.js, I think, I forget the name of it. And then when it loads, the page loads up, it hooks itself into the page load event. When that runs, it then walks through the DOM of the page, the structure of the page, and finds all the tables in it. And then for each of those tables, it makes the headers clickable. And then clicking on one of the column headers resorts the table by that column. But it doesn't do anything to do with the server, because you don't need the server for that. This is the sort of thing the DOM's absolutely perfect for, because you've already got all that information. You know, what's the point in making each of the, you know, in your HTML that you serve from the server, you make each of the headers have be a link, which links to, you know, the page you're on, sort by equals field one. And you've got to make sure that it also passes back the other query strings that you've got, if you had any query strings. You know, what's the point in resubmitting it back to the server so the user sits there and waits for 10 or 15 or 20 seconds to get back exactly the same information they had, just in a different order? You know, it's silly to make people wait for that, and you can avoid that because you've already got that data, you're just moving it around. So the DOM lets you manipulate the page tree, the page source that you've got. It's like being able to load new pages but without any waiting whatsoever. And I mentioned real-time comment previews earlier. I've seen various people who've got textile for their weblog comments, and some guys have written a JavaScript textile parser, which means that as soon as you're typing in things in textile, it's showing you a preview next to what you're typing of what it's going to say when it saves it as a comment. And again, that's perfect, you know. The JavaScript takes the stuff you've typed in. Every time you press a key, it reacts to that event by saying, okay, what have you typed now? I'll parse that with textile and then put the result in HTML in here. And again, you're just manipulating the page that you've got. It gives users the ability to see what they're doing without having to submit it and then wait and then think, oh no, I got it wrong, and change it, submit it again. You know, you step away from the submit and wait and submit and wait cycle. And the advantage with these kinds of scripts, these sort of generic enhancements that you can drop in and maybe customize to what it is that you've got, what it is that you're doing, is that you get to stand on the shoulders of giants, you know. Isaac Newton said that, and he did quite well for himself. And he felt that he got where he was by having taken advantage of other people's work, having built upon it, and that's exactly what you can do. There are tons of DOM scripts out there which make small usability enhancements to a site. And each of those enhancements you can just drop in to a site that's yours. So you'll have real-time comment previews. When someone clicks on the submit button, it'll deactivate that submit button. So they know what, no one clicks it twice and no one double orders anything ever again, which would be good. So you're taking other people's work and combining it into something that's uniquely yours without having to do all that much work yourself, which is great. You don't have to be a JavaScript expert to use this stuff. You know, you don't have to write Gmail. don't take away the idea that what the DOM and AJAX give you is the ability to write the sort of Web 2.0 applications that Andy was describing earlier. It does give you the ability to write that, but it's not just for people who want to take the web and make it be applications instead. It's applicable to practically every site out there, just little tweaks. The little things that turn the good into the great, again, in the same way that you can make those changes with design to turn a pretty average looking site into a really, really brilliant site, and the same way you can make those changes with information architecture if you're going to think about the navigation of a site. If you design it right, it's so much easier to use. And these little, tiny little usability tweaks, just little things that make the Mac better than Windows, you know, that sort of thing, that pleasure in a user experience is what will keep people coming back to the sites that you're building or the applications that you're building. It'll make them tell their friends. It'll make them recommend them onwards. It'll keep your subscription-based £10 a month model running. So that's the kind of thing that we can do, because the DOM takes the existing web and it makes it better. You don't have to throw away everything that we've spent the last 10 years building and say, right, we're going to rewrite everything in JavaScript. That's what we're going to do. You know, We've learned the lessons that we need to by moving to a standards-based web, using web standards to build sites, put them together. And because of that, Andy said it's a revolution, at least partially, but I'm not sure it is. I think what it is evolution, because we want to take the existing web and make it better. Yes, it gives you the ability to build whole brand new applications, but you don't necessarily need to do that in order to deliver what your users want. You're already doing it. You know, it's not as if you've been wasting the last 5 or 10 years. You're delivering what users want. You can just make it that tiny little bit better without any significant impact on the people who can't appreciate it. You know, so from what Andy was saying, if 2006 is going to be the year of CSS or possibly the year of the DOM, or however you want to look at it, and Web 2.0 is going to revolutionize or evolutionize the way we look at everything, then it's becoming abundantly clear to me that although the web's been a roaring success up until now, the web's best days lie ahead of us. You know, and the people in this room, you're the pioneers. You know, you're sitting here listening to me. People say, well, yeah, I just hit things and it does what I want it to do. People won't think, yeah, the web is like the desktop, except it's a bit crap. People will think, yeah, the web, it is the delivery system that everyone always talked about. And that's what we're looking for. You know, you can, without making fundamental differences to the way everything works. You don't have to throw away the last 10 years of user experience analysis and work in how to make the browser work and so on. Just get out there and change the web so that it works better than what we've got at the moment. And in changing the web, you really, really will change the world in the same way that the web, when it was brought along, changed the world fundamentally for the better. Web 2.0 can change it fundamentally again. And you can do that. That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Stuart. Any questions?
Hi, Stuart. I was wondering, you've talked a lot about unobtrusive JavaScript.
Ah.
You've talked a lot about unobtrusive JavaScript and only putting script tag in the header. There's one particular area where that doesn't work, in my experience, which is when you want something to happen the moment a particular element has loaded, not when the whole page is loaded. So in the case of the Amazon page that you saw there, there's an awful lot of images, an awful lot of page furniture on that page.
Yeah.
And if you were to wait for the whole lot to load before you changed your buttons into star rating links, then the user might have already been interacting with the page by the time that happened.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you've got any experience of ways to handle that.
The thing I'd like to see happen is browser manufacturers recognize the fact that a lot of people are developing applications like this and give us a better way of hooking into pages before all the images load. Now, the Mozilla people have done that. Instead of hooking a load event, you hook a DOM content loaded event. And then as soon as the page is loaded and you've got a model for the page structure, you can then have your scripts run. Internet Explorer doesn't do that. Now, Dean Edwards is always at the forefront of stuff like this, but he's done some work with trying to emulate something approaching the DOM content loaded event in Internet Explorer, and I believe he had some success, but I forget the details. But certainly I would like to see the browser manufacturers taking a step to say, okay, let's make this possible. And say the Mozilla people have done it. God knows what's going to be in IE7. If you know, then tell me about it. But Dave Hyatt's very quick at revving this kind of thing into Safari. So I'd like to see the DOM content loaded event being standardized across browsers. And that would pretty much solve that problem.
Okay, that's all we've got time for from Stuart. But thanks again to Stuart.
Thank you very much.